Oh.
So, with some of the Sinawali, I don't know if people had the... Not that they didn't have the foresight, but I don't know if it was important to them to keep it in, like, a formal, like, organization or structure. Because so much was, from my understanding of the Kali or the Filipino martial arts, was passed on from person to person within the family or, you know, with the relationships. Mm-hmm. With the specific intent of, like, well, I want you to learn this because we might need it. Right. Not because people were trying to make, like, a business or a school or preserve it as an art form. And so in a similar way, it seems like that's some of the impression that I get. And also, you know, even from your writing, that maybe that's how some of the healing, how the healing was in the Philippines also.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one question I have is, so a lot of people say hilot.
Right.
Do you see hilot as, like, kind of an umbrella term for healing, or hilot is a specific...
You know, it's... that right there, I had a little bit trouble at first, because what I discovered was that there's so many different names to distinguish different types of healers.
Yeah.
You have the bone setters, you have those who do manual medicine, you have the shamans.
Yeah.
You have... those who specialize in specific type of treatments, you know, like the use of the, you know, cupping, for example.
Yeah.
But then what happens all the time is that there's an overlapping of practices. So you can't just say, oh, this, like here, especially here in the West, where everything is compartmentalized.
Yeah.
You work in a hospital, so you know there's the nursing department or there's the pediatrics and such.
Yeah.
So everything is cut and dry.
Yeah.
But over there, it's not, because you have practices that are overlapping.
Yeah.
You know, just like my grandmother, for example, Alejandra Miguel Mayor. She was a midwife, and she learned from her father how to deliver babies. But she was also a bone setter. She did some shamanic practices. And she did manual medicine. So what do you call them?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, when people say hilot, immediately they think of massage.
Yeah.
And I am against that.
Because that's too limiting? Because hilot
is... It is, yes. For one thing, there is that aspect. But I would say that massage is a subcategory.
Yeah.
I would rather say that hilot... in one sense, hilot is a form of manual medicine.
Uh-huh.
And that is more of an appropriate term because it is used for such.
Yeah. Since I don't even know where how old I am, I have to calculate.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll just keep this here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think people... Well, so in martial arts, I think a lot of people have heard that there's... some healing, and the only word that they have is hilot.
Right.
But even though there's a lot of people that know that there's that it might exist, especially in Filipino martial arts, I feel like, especially these days, almost nobody knows really anything about it.
Yeah, it's funny because teachers I've had, you know, some are long term, some are short term.
Yeah.
But several of them, they always had that aspect of the healing arts.
Yeah.
And it's natural. It's a natural progression. I mean, you learn how to destroy something, you should at least know how to fix it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So my maternal grandfather, he had both.
Yeah.
He knew how to... I never met him.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle said that he knew a form of martial art. Well, he had... they called it Shetetero, like Cinco, but it had additional two strikes.
Yeah.
But then he also had a secondary art, which was an empty hand form called the Cuerdas.
The Cuerdas?
No, not the Cuerdas, just Cuerdas.
Oh, Cuerdas.
Yeah, but it's still the same meaning, you know, chords or something like that.
Yeah.
But with this particular art, he had the capability of causing such injuries like temporary paralysis and nose bleeding. And one of my uncles even said hysteria. which was kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But once it was executed and had an effect, he also knew how to reverse the process.
Interesting.
And it was usually on the opposite side of the area that was attacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were others also who knew this art. It was something, I'm not sure about other parts of the Philippines, but at least in the north.
Yeah.
My uncle met others who were contemporaries of my grandfather because they were under oath not to teach it.
Oh, really?
And my grandfather refused to teach my uncles.
Uh-huh.
They went to another man. His last name. Well, they from Ilocos Norte. They migrated to Isabela.
Okay.
And so my uncles, they met another person. His last name was Kagungon. Mm-hmm. He was Ibanag.
Uh-huh.
But he also knew it. But yet he wouldn't teach it also, because he was also under oath. One of my uncles, he went to Ilocos Sur and he met La Cuesta. He knew it. He
really?
Said he would not. He was under oath.
Did they all call it? They all called it cuerdas.
Cuerdas, yeah. They called it cuerdas.
So, do you think that there was a group of them and they all swore to each other?
Yes, because according to my uncle, they learned it during the they were in the was it constabulary?
Yeah.
It was during World War One.
Yeah.
And actually, my maternal grandfather Lucio Respicio Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be shipped off to Europe.
Really?
Yeah, but World War One, it already had ended, so
yeah.
Nobody was shipped off.
Hmm. It's fascinating.
And they learned it. They learned it while they were in training.
Yeah. They learned
While they were in training, yes, in the military training. Because my grandfather, he had the choice. They had a choice of either learning so-called Filipino martial arts, you know, with a weapon. Since my grandfather already had that aspect of training,
yeah.
He decided to go with this other one, which was the cuerdas, the empty hand.
Oh.
And to top it off, it was taught by a Japanese man.
Really?
Yes, a Japanese man who was, I don't know if he was born in the Philippines, but he was raised in the Philippines. He was fluent in, he spoke Tagalog, but he was also fluent in Ilocano, which... him and my grandfather, they got along because of that.
Yeah.
But that was very interesting. So,
yeah, that's very
information about that, not sure.
Yeah.
I met somebody over here. He said that his grandfather also knew it.
Really?
And he was also under oath not to teach it. He would not teach his grandson, the one
yeah.
he knew. So,
huh.
I don't know. It's something that went with them.
That's so interesting, the hysteria part.
Yeah, I don't know what that one's all about.
Yeah. You know, in the Sayok system, there's mm-hmm. a touch point subsystem.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, it was Pamanaton, Chris Sayok's father, Tatang Bo Sayok, that taught a lot of the touch points.
Uh-huh.
And so he taught it to some of the other Tuhans, and they, you know, then I learned it from them.
Mm-hmm.
But the same touch points that you'd use to, you know, create a reaction are the same, like, the direction and the way, the method that you do it, if you're causing pain or causing something, you sort of do the opposite or go in the opposite direction, you know,
yes.
for, like, the healing side of it. So
okay.
I definitely think that, first, I think for many parts of Filipino martial arts, people would get hurt in training or get injured or something, so there was a need to do that. But I think overall, you know, Guru Dan talks about it a lot, that like, you know, warriors are also like doctors or physicians or healers are also a form of warriors, because they're fighting disease or they're fighting ailments
right.
and things like that. So I think it is,
well, look at the battlefields, you know, of India. A lot of the surgical instruments today, they can be traced to the battlefields, particularly of India.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. I mean, they had to learn how to... I mean, of course, they had their advanced form of medicine.
Yeah.
Ayurvedic medicine or
yeah.
Unani, whatever they called it back
yeah.
then. But they knew exactly what, you know, how to use the instruments
yeah.
For surgical procedures. You know,
yeah.
They get cut and
yeah.
such.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, going back to kind of like the... the phenomenon of a lot of people that know, they seem to know about Hilut or some healing,
yes,
without actually knowing very much more detail about it. One of the things I really appreciated about your book was it was very vast in its, you took a lot of examples, and I liked how you organized it into everything from like oración to, I mean, it just really covered a lot more than when I first read it, covered way more than I expected it to. And then when I reread it again, I guess there were some things when I read it the first time it didn't really, I wasn't as familiar with. So when I reread it again, I'm very, very interested in things like those boulders from like Lemuria, like those kinds of boulders. And then I think just certain things really stuck out with me. Like, so that side of it, at one point you talked about how like in these healing arts, it's more than just three dimensions, but like four, five, and six dimensions. And I don't know if you're speaking kind of just figuratively, or but I'm very connected to this idea that Filipino culture, whether through Kali, martial arts, or healing, or other things, really transcends time and space. That like we are connected and not separated solely because of geography or because of time, but we do connect to something that's bigger than ourselves and that links us also together.
Mm-hmm. Then what comes to mind is one healer back in the Ilocos Norte. He had the ability to look into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, you know, how did he do that?
Yeah.
And I paid a visit to him.
Yeah.
And he said that he could literally see within. What he does is, he has a form of practice that he does. And it was very simple. And I thought, this must be a secret. And I said, no, it's not a secret, he said, because not everybody could do it.
Yeah.
But basically what he said was that he would take a Coke bottle, an empty Coke bottle,
yeah,
and he would start to, his mind, he would send his mind, his thoughts into the bottle until he was literally, I mean, not literally, but visually, he was inside of the bottle where he can see the inner wall of the glass, and he would practice that.
Yeah.
And once he perfected that, then he would transfer that into different objects and finally into the human body.
Wow.
And he said that one time there was one woman who came to him, and he sent his inner vision into the body, and he said, no, you need to go to see a doctor. And he said that he felt there was a tumor there of some sort.
Yeah.
And so she did. She went to the doctor, they x-rayed, and sure enough, there was a tumor.
Wow.
And so he kept on sending people who he felt, you know, it wasn't proper for him to treat.
Yeah.
And he gained somewhat of a reputation where the doctors finally said, you know, who's this person all about? We need to check him out.
Yeah, yeah.
So they went to visit him in the attempts of debunking what he claimed.
Yeah.
So they invited him to the hospital. And they just chose some random patient.
Yeah.
It was an accident patient.
Yeah.
And so he looked, and he pointed out he has broken ribs.
Yeah.
He said the amount of broken ribs in the area.
Yeah.
And the doctors, they just laughed at him.
Yeah.
And he challenged them.
Yeah.
Take an x-ray. They took an x-ray, and sure enough, his, whatever he confirmed, or whatever he said was confirmed through the x-rays.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things that, phenomena that are present over there. Especially whenever I go to Hawaii, when I go to the Philippines, there's something that's strong within me. It just, it magnified it, more enhanced. And then when I come back here, then it's not as strong. It's different. It's really interesting.
You know, it's, you know, obviously the Catholics have been in the Philippines for a long time, and I went to a Jesuit high school, and I'm Catholic, and so. And, but I've heard some stories about from priests who had either spent time in the Philippines, most of them who spent time directly in the Philippines, and even for them, they're like, there is something that's just so different about that place. They don't know what it is, but even in a regular mass, they feel like it's different. But they had seen, you know, people who are like my, that were like my science teachers or philosophy teachers, who are not real fringy, you know, like just hard science guys. They would tell me stories, these crazy possessions that they saw.
And this is where?
In the Philippines.
Oh, okay.
Like just possessions where people were flying up into the air and hitting the ceiling.
So they literally
saw
witnesses. It.
Yeah, they saw exorcisms and possessions, and people will say, you know, it's just also with Hawaii, also the Philippines and Hawaii, and maybe some other places too. So why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that is? That I don't think that it's just that Filipinos are more superstitious, so they have more ghost stories. It could be.
Mm-hmm.
But it just does seem like there's more, like a different energy. I don't know what it is.
Well,
do you think it's like a focal point?
One thing to consider is that the archipelago is situated in the Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of activity taking place. Indonesia, everywhere, Japan, all those places. Then you have a variety of different geographical landscapes, which can also form a lot of vortexes.
Yeah.
You also have the practices of the people, where they came from.
Yeah.
And people ask me, where did the healing arts come from? I tell them, it came with the people. And that's where you have to delve, you know, where did the people come from?
Yeah.
And it gets, you know, even deeper into interrelated subjects.
Yeah.
Same thing, where did martial arts come from? It came with the people.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, some people would say, oh, it came from Kali as the mother art.
Yeah.
But not everybody professes that. And there's just so much that has taken place in regards to migration, where people come from, that there's so many different possibilities.
Yeah.
And then you also have all these various spiritual practices.
Yeah.
And esoteric, metaphysical practices. There's a lot taking place.
I think sometimes people get, in my opinion, for me, I know a lot of people are very interested in, like, where did it come from or what's the origin. But I think sometimes it can be tempting to get so caught up in that, like, what is the origin and how to trace it. But the fact is that I agree. I think it does come from the people, and it is in the people. So however it came, you know, we should recognize it.
You know, I was mentioning... there's one thing that I would point out. Whenever I give my talks, I talk about the left brain, right brain.
Uh-huh.
Filipinos are very right-brained. Yeah. If you look at... especially third world countries, but you know, especially in this particular subject, the Philippines. If you look at the highways over there, people are just driving all over the place, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Left and right, they're cutting each other off. A three-lane road could be five or six lanes, and people are just driving. I call them psychic drivers. Because they know exactly when someone's going to, you know, cut them off.
Yeah, because there's not that many accidents. There's some, but
everybody is such in tune with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for myself, if I'm driving, I know if someone's going to cut me off. You just know, you just feel it.
Yeah.
And you physically see it, but also there's a sense of knowing that's going to happen. So with that said, it's very right brain in that everybody is just... operating on a different level.
Yeah.
Even if they're in line for something, they don't fall in straight lines like they do in the West. No, everybody just crams up front. And of course, you know, there was that Western influence, but generally everyone's just going to cram forward and just, you know, reach out their hand, or, you know, whoever's first, you know, or whoever's chosen is gets picked. On the other hand, if you look at society over here, Western society, everything is very linear, very straight, forward. you fall into lines. Even the driving system, everything is very linear. And if somebody cuts you off, you get offended.
Yeah.
You know, it's personal space kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's total opposite over there.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at left brain, right brain, the right brain is more connected with things that are more creative.
Yeah.
But also of spiritual nature.
Oh.
Because of that creative aspect, that openness to receive, to perceive, to experience things that are more of spiritual nature.
Yeah.
Whereas the linear, not so much because of their compartmentalized, they're kind of more restricted, so to speak. They're kind of more thinking in the box.
Yeah.
So you also have that influence as well.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if that's why then there's so many different methods of healing, because people as individuals are more receptive to a gift that they've been given. And so it doesn't have to be that, well, my lineage is I learned from, you know, Master Virgil, and he learned from, you know what I mean? Like, whereas that's a very kind of Western thing, right? Like people, they went to whatever, Stanford Medical School, and or even in like in some, I mean, even in Filipino martial arts here in America, it's like, well, my teacher is this person, whose teacher was that. But I think you're right, like outside of our Western, and I'm super Western, I'm super Western, super American. So I'm used to that, but I think in other cultures, maybe in the world, that's much more of a, that non-linear experience of learning and teaching and sharing is maybe much more common than what we know of here.
All right. And it's funny you mentioned that, because in regards to the healing arts, a lot of people, a lot of the healers over there, or I should say people in general, if they are healers, they put a lot of their soul, the spirit into it.
Yes.
So that's why there is so much of a variety of different type of healers, because of that factor.
Yeah.
I've even heard people in the West say that Philippines is a mecca of healers.
Yeah.
Because there are so many healers over there.
Yeah.
Period. However, it's because of the mere fact of that essence of the spirit taking place, you know, whether it be in the healing arts or even in the fighting arts.
Yes.
That's why the Filipino martial arts, is there's such a variety.
Yes.
Earlier you said that the FMA over here, people think, I'm from this lineage or that lineage. However, if you look back at the original teachers, even if they learn from a lineage, they still are going to insert their flavor into it.
Yeah.
And it evolves from there.
Yeah.
So same thing with the healing arts.
Yeah. I had no idea that whenever it was, 60s or 70s, that there was this phenomenon of these psychic surgeons that drew attention outside of the Philippines. I was, you know, you. I think you listed some, like, I don't know if you listed references or not, but I'm curious to read about how that was received, you know, elsewhere. Because, you know, you talked about how people came to the Philippines to look for, you know, to hope for some sort of
cure
or healing or something. And so that was fascinating to me.
Yes. Probably the most popular one was Antonio Apawa. He's the one who really gained reputation and popularized it, so to speak, only because his fame reached outside of the Philippines.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of people, scientists, and also people who just wanted to be cured. You know, they sought him, they sought the different psychic surgeons over there to do this miraculous psychic surgery, you know, without the use of instruments.
Yeah.
Actually, I used to travel with one.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I used to travel with a psychic surgeon.
Okay. Here's the Vila, Senor Vila.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Okay, with chocolate, you want this chocolate?
Packet? Yep.
Okay,
thanks.
Ketchup, hot sauce?
I'm okay. Do you want anything?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great, thanks. So you said you used to travel with a psychic surgeon.
Oh, yes, yes. So I used to travel. I used to travel with a psychic surgeon, and the way it happened was that I was invited to meet this person, and then to do a demonstration.
Uh-huh.
And then when the person was pleased with what was seen, then I was asked to eventually do my own thing.
Yeah.
As that person would also do the psychic surgery.
Yeah.
And then we used to start traveling as well. And there was still a part of me that was kind of skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that person was out of the room, I started to peek inside a bowl of alcohol and cotton balls to see if there was any tablets of some sort that would cause blood.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find any.
Huh.
And however, also, I did experience it back in the Philippines where there were some psych surgeons who would do some kind of triggering.
Yeah.
It was very obvious. I would catch them. Through a keen eye, you could see that they were pulling things out from hidden places.
Yeah.
However, if we really look at it, it really boils back to the person being healed. Because a lot of these scientists, they were kind of 50-50 split, where some would say they observed, they examined, and they saw nothing that would say that it was some kind of trickery. But yet there was also those who said, oh, it was all chicken blood guts or such. So it was 50-50 on that. However, even though the people were doing some kind of sleight of hands, the one who was receiving, because they believed, they were actually healed.
Yeah.
And so where do you really look at it?
Yeah.
The end result of the person being healed or the person you're doing the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it really boils down to psych surgery as a form of modern day shamanism.
Yeah.
Because if you look at some of the old historical accounts of some of these, that the Spanish took, documented, they spoke about pulling strands of hair from the body, or cockroaches, or thorns, different things like that. Well, same thing with the psychosurgeons, where they would pull things out too, whether it's chicken guts, or even certain cases, they would pull out sand, or stones, or insects even, and different things. So, that the person, it's all in the psyche.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line, that the person is being healed.
Yeah. So, you went, even in your book, you talk about a lot of accounts, healers that you visited and either learned from or got to experience, their methods on you. So, was it hard to... Were you accepted when you would go in, and were they forthcoming with their information and sharing their stories?
Yeah, that's interesting too. A lot of people over the years have asked me if I can teach them, if I could be a mentor. And sometimes it's not feasible because there may be on the other side of the U.S.
Yeah.
And so, it would take dedication to really be there present physically.
Yeah.
I would always suggest that they seek within the community, the Filipino community, to look for someone who does healing.
Yeah.
Any type of traditional healing work. And even if it was just a minute thing that he could learn, it's something that they can add to their, under the belt, different things. So in my case, I was fortunate to learn from my maternal grandmother.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to learn from my father. And they did also learn from their respective families. When I wanted to expand on it, after they passed away, I wanted to seek others. I was curious.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn to see what they knew. I wanted to compare what they knew and what I learned.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to learn from an indigenous point of view.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn the indigenous science.
Yes.
And so what I did was I started to seek others who knew, had the knowledge. Some of them, I would ask them first. In the beginning, I would ask, can you teach me?
Yeah.
And their common response was, how can I teach this? Oh. This is a gift from God. How can I teach a gift?
Yeah.
And I was always puzzled by that.
Yeah.
But then I finally understood that it was something that was inherent in them.
Yeah.
That it's just in their DNA, you know.
Yeah.
People come from musical family. They're bound to learn learn music very easily.
Yeah.
And so it is with the healing arts, with the martial arts, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that there are, however, some attributes, some traits, or some certain practices that can be learned that would help the one who is wanting to learn.
Yeah.
How to finally learn how to get that holistic aspect of healing.
Yeah. That's fascinating. You know, do you know who this guy John Edwards is?
Oh, no.
He used to have this show called Crossing Over.
Oh, and he'd have I remember that.
So there was
that's
a time,
been how many years ago?
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. Well, I was very fascinated with him, too, at one point. So, you know, I read some of his books, and I was interested because he has a Christian influence in his own, I guess, practice. And so he, I started reading some of his, like, teacher's books on, like, angels and just different things. But a few years ago, he came out with a book, and it was, I don't know the best word. I'm sure there was a better word for it, but he just was, it was a book that talked about many forms of skills that he and his teachers or his students would work on. And so instead of everything being so compartmentalized, it kind of reminds me of the stuff that you wrote about with the healing arts in the Philippines, that yes, some people use like a crystal ball, some people use the tarot cards, some people use like numerology or other forms of divination, or some people have a gift to communicate. And it's not so much that if you are a psychic medium, that's the one thing you do, but rather, you know, a lot of that philosophy was there's many ways that you can try to ascertain information and to achieve a goal, and how can you use these different tools. So yeah, you may have someone that, I guess, in their storefront it says tarot cards, but maybe they do a whole lot of other things. And even within that, yes, maybe there's some people that are just kind of scamming the public, but then within that too, there's also, they felt there was a lot of legitimacy in the work that they do. In fact, the part that you wrote about, like water, I think you talked about how like water can be a source of absorbing negative energy and stuff like that. He had written about this way that he, for his sort of his like psychic protection and spiritual armor, that he uses water like in the kind of like in the shower, where he projects, you know, whatever negativity he has and lets it literally kind of like wash off of him and be cleansed in that kind of way. So I don't know, I just found it very fascinating because there's so many links, there's a lot of connections, partially because it's so vast, you know, the things that you talked about.
Oh yes.
And you know, even with there's some things that you hinted were like very pre-colonial, like the Lemurian boulders. But then, you know, you also acknowledged the Christian influence, you know, whether it's the prayers or the archangels and things like that. All that's like very fascinating to me. So yeah.
Yeah, especially in that regard, in regards to the Christian elements. I mean, it's, I mean, look at where all these oración came from.
Uh-huh.
It did come from the Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
They had these, you probably heard of Sabino's Black Book.
Mm.
That was a book of oración that his last name was Sabino. He supposedly stole from the priest And they had all their esoteric prayers in there.
Really?
Because they were keeping it away from the general public. Of course, yeah. That's their power. And so something like that you would keep away from them. But then... I lost it.
No, it's okay. Those Orashans are so fascinating to me, too. There was one time where I saw this one. I wish I had, like, written it down or recorded it somehow. It was beautiful in a way.
Oh, yeah?
But it was written in Tagalog, and I think maybe one of the...
It was an Orashon, you said?
Yeah, it was an Orashon, but it started, like, when someone translated it, because I don't speak Tagalog. I don't speak Tagalog or any dialects, and I have a hard time understanding even Tagalog. So I was reading it, or I was trying to read it, and someone said, "Do you know what that means?" And I said, "No, I don't know what it means." And he was like, I call upon the name above all names. And it was like this big, you know, it was a long and beautiful Orashon, but I didn't retain it other than that first part, because it was just, I don't know, I really liked it. And then last time I was here, I talked to Guru Ramon Rubia.
Oh, yes.
And he was telling me, like, he was given some Orashons by some of the, like, Manongs or whomever in Cebu, mm-hmm. but they had it in like this. It was contained in like a horn or something firm, and he like wore it around his waist, almost like a belt. But inside it was like rolled up scroll, and it had like basically Latin prayers.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought those were interesting. And then many years ago, I read Mark Wiley's book where he talked about Datong Illustrissimo's tattoos and things like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, in fact, since you mentioned that name, Datong Illustrissimo, even his uncle, the one who's featured in the Guru Dance book,
mm-hmm.
Illustrissimo,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he even has that tattoo on his on his leg or his calf or somewhere.
Yeah. Do you know Mark Wiley?
We haven't met. Just through the web.
Yeah, same with me. I've never met him. He's in Philly, so he's not too far from me.
Mm.
I'd like to meet him sometime. But there, in one of his interviews, he recommended your book because someone was asking him about healing, and he said that he had traveled through the Philippines. You know, and he had heard about these things too, and so he was looking like, where can I find healers and where can I find these things? And he ended up finding healers like in, I think maybe in Taiwan, but also like Indonesia and stuff like that. But he was saying that there's a lack of resource, you know, for someone like myself that's maybe not in a huge community where we know of a lot of... people that, you know, are healers or that mm-hmm. healer. There's not a lot of stuff that's accessible for people to learn about these kinds of things.
Yeah, it's something that's kept within the family or community.
Mm-hmm.
That's why those who are really eager to learn, I tell them, be persistent, just go out and just keep on asking people.
Yeah.
You know, if who does healer? And once they find somebody, just,
sure, I'll be right back.
Ideally, it would be nice if they did have a legitimate injury, for example.
Yeah.
Or issue.
Yeah.
Because then they could really work on it. You can really experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can bring somebody who has some kind of injury.
Mm-hmm.
There are times where I would go to my grandmother and ask her to ilok me. Or in Ilocano, we say ablon.
Ablon.
Yes. And then she would, you know, do her thing. Actually, a lot of times I would actually fake it, because just to learn.
Mm-hmm.
just about am. But what I really wanted to do is, you know, it was just something in me that, because I grew up watching her, people would come to the house, yeah. And I would always hold two bottles. One was a bottle of coconut oil,
uh-huh.
And the other one was sapsapo or liniment,
yeah,
with some herbs and stuff in it. And I would observe, and everything that she did would be planted in my subconscious,
mm-hmm.
and into my super subconscious.
Yeah.
And finally, when I was in first year college back in the Philippines, one of our roommates was carried in.
Yeah.
He sprained his ankle.
Yeah.
And the doctor wasn't in, the nurse wasn't in, so they asked me if I knew what to do.
Yeah.
And I looked at the ankle, it was swollen.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, okay, get me a bulb of ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. Somebody got some ginger, and I started to squeeze the juice onto the ankle, and I started to manipulate the area. And of course, the person was screaming in pain, everyone was laughing at him. But then I was kind of wondering, how do I know to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing this and I don't even know what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. But yet I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that was starting to come out from my subconscious into that moment.
Yeah.
Everything that I used to watch. But yet it was also that inherent part that was coming out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that was my very first experience in healing. The second time was when one lady came to the house. She had something wrong with her lower leg. I said, oh yeah, my grandmother, she's right there. She can help you. And she said, no, I want you to do it. I said, oh no, she's right there, she'll do it. No, I need stronger hands. No, she's still strong. No, I want you to do it because it runs in your blood. The moment she said that, it was as if I had a noose around my neck, and I couldn't escape from it. I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I did what I, what came out, what I thought. And she finally spotted, okay, I'm not lying in. See, it's okay now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, it's good, whatever. But then it was something that just came out naturally. But eventually I really took an interest in it, because it was, I guess it was my dharma. It was something that was presented to me that I just had to really delve deeper into it.
Yeah.
So hence my years of research, of seeking different healers, of really wanting to relearn, to maintain, retain, to preserve, to promote, to propagate our traditional healing arts.
Yeah.
But not only the mechanics of it, but also the indigenous science behind it.
Yes.
So earlier when you mentioned about the martial arts of striking an individual and going a certain direction, same thing in the healing arts, where there was always that outward motion.
Yeah.
One time I was with my teacher. He was teaching me Cinco Terro. But he was also a healer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to do a movement, because he was also teaching me the healing. And I started to go upward, up the arm. And he told me, no, go away.
Yeah.
Go away from the heart.
Yeah, that's,
he was very,
what, we heard, that's what we learned too.
Yes. And so you have that, not only the physical aspects, but also the energetic aspects of going certain directions.
Yes.
Where everything is going outwards, or is going downwards. For example, there's one practice that we do in Ilocos, which is called Dingpil.
Mm-hmm.
It involves buneng or bolo.
Yeah.
And this is particularly done for somebody who has a feverish condition.
Yeah.
And what we do is we would take the flat side of the bolo, and it would start pressing the body.
Mm.
Press downward from the head, going down towards the feet. But it's in that direction. Yeah. It's from the top of the head down the arm, down the hand, down the body, down the feet. That direction. But you also have... see, there's two sides of the coin. I always look at it that way.
Yeah.
Just like you have the two sides of the coin of the healing martial arts, uh-huh. but also in regards to the metaphysics or yeah. esoteric aspects, but you also have the physical aspects
yeah.
Of the healing.
Yes.
So in this particular case, you have someone who has a fever uh-huh. due to whatever, infection yeah. or what have you. So the body is naturally what? When someone has a fever, the body is,
you know, weakened.
It's weakened, yeah. but also what is it that the body experiences when the person has a fever?
Oh, it's trying to resist, trying to fight back.
They're trying to fight back.
Yeah.
Okay, so if they're trying to fight back, the body is trying to burn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's a burning sensation, there is... the body becomes...
hot.
Hot, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So, you have the body that's heated up. Now you have the bolo, and that's made of steel.
Mm-hmm.
And steel is naturally what?
Cool.
Right. So if you press the body, you have that coolness
mm-hmm.
that's being introduced in the body. It's kind of a neutralizing agent
mm-hmm.
where it's trying to cool down. But at the same time, you have the metaphysics of it, where you're starting to push down.
Yes.
There was a couple of instances where there were some people who had entities of them.
Yeah.
And the healer would start to push on the body and start to push out the entity out, downward, 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 out of the feet.
Uh-huh.
But it was that direction, that particular direction, yeah. where it's going downwards. So same thing with... using the bolo.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you have the physical aspect, but you also have the spiritual or the metaphysical aspect where you're pushing the entity or the so-called entity that supposedly caused the illness in the first place.
Yeah.
You're pushing it downward and out towards the feet and outward.
Yeah. Interesting.
So you have these different aspects of healing,
mm-hmm.
both the the physical or the science behind it, mm-hmm. and also the indigenous science or the metaphysics.
That's so interesting to me. But even, I don't know how the best way to describe it, like, because you talked about how also parts of your soul, sometimes it's healing of your soul, and you wrote that story about how your cat went away and then came back to
yes.
return part of your soul.
Oh, yes, yes.
And
It was my dream.
Yeah, I found that very, I don't know the word for it, like I strongly connected to that.
Mm.
And I think I've had that, probably most people in their lives where they have like, you know, when my grandfather passed away or when people just in my life have either passed away or gone away, like there's like an emptiness, like there's a hole, like almost like a hole in your heart. So when you had written about that, I was like, oh, maybe that's why ever since, let's say for instance, you know, when my grandfather passed away, maybe that's why it always felt like there's a piece missing, because there was a piece missing, there is a piece missing. I'd never connected it in I think that's the side of all of this. I mean, it is holistic, but where I'm so fascinated by it because it's so much more than, even with this, it's so much more than just the physical and metaphysical and the indigenous science. It's like, it's really like how everything is connected. This, in a similar way, it's how I see, you know, our Filipino martial arts.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's... you do it in this, you learn it with a stick or with two sticks, but how it's applied in your life is really can connect to everything.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Even how just now you're talking about how it's so individualized and it was like in your blood to be able to have some of that gift. It reminds me of a story. One of my mentors in the Sayok system, when he was younger, he was talking to Pamanatone Sayok about his goals, you know, what he wanted to do with Kali and stuff like that. And he was telling him how he wanted to learn from all these people so that he could, you know, get his certifications and so he would be able to teach Filipino martial arts. And something that was very powerful to him, and even it was powerful to me when he told me the story, was that Tohan Sayok said, you know, you don't need anyone's permission to teach our arts. You know, it's your birthright to teach it. That was very powerful to him because it didn't, all of a sudden it wasn't like, I need to go to these people that he respected, but he didn't need to ask anyone's permission. It was something that was already inside of him. So it kind of reminded me of that too. And talking about the lady that came to the house and wanted you to do it.
Like, right.
You had, maybe you didn't recognize it in the moment, but yeah, you already had the authority to do it.
Ah, yes, yes. That's very true.
Yeah. I'm gonna, that one of the questions I had for you was, if you, like, how could I learn? Like, how could I, but I think what I'll do is, I think there is someone in the Baltimore area, there's a small Filipino community, and I think there is someone that does that.
I'm being pushed.
Yeah.
I'm being pushed to get out there.
Yeah.
Over the years, so many people have asked. And it's funny because when when I started to do a lot of reading of different Filipino martial arts schools, they would always mention that the healing of arts, they would specifically say Hilot, was part of their curriculum, the higher or the advanced level of their healing arts. And so I would contact them. I would ask them about it.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have it in our, we don't have anyone teaching right now. And, but they had it in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one thing, you know, they may have been BSing it, you know, that they did teach it. However, there was still that inner desire to have that holistic part, or that to have the arts, you know.
Yeah.
Because you see the Chinese system, you know, they're very well-rounded. You know, the martial arts, you know, they have the healing arts as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas ours is kind of somewhat lost or separated. Of course, you know, you have all these different things to blame. You know, like colonialism, you know, we lost a lot of our indigenous practices. But yeah, at the same time, there's still that inner desire to learn these aspects.
Yeah.
There were even a lot of quite a few actually, different Filipino healers who claimed that they knew Hilot. I would contact them. I would ask them, "How did you learn?" Because I'm always curious. I'm always curious to learn about their background. I learned it from my grandmother or something. You know, I could tell if they were BSing me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there were some who actually did come from a lineage from healers.
Yeah.
And they were honest about it. They said, you know, I came from a line of healers. I didn't learn it, but yet there's something in me that is so natural and people tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they give out clues that say, okay, yes, I believe this person, that this person does have the gift of healing. They just need guidance. And so those are the people who I am open to, and as much as possible I try to guide them, you know, without physically being there.
Yeah.
Unless I do some kind of workshops, then it would be even much more easier to pass on this knowledge.
Now, do you travel and do talks or workshops and stuff?
The last workshop I did, actually, I was invited by Daniel
Nonero.
Oh, yeah. Because he was, you know, he does his thing in Europe.
Yeah, that's right.
What do we call it?
XTMA.
XTMA, yes.
Yeah.
And so he asked me one day to join him over there because he's always teaching, you know, the martial aspects.
Yeah.
But he wanted them to experience the other side of the coin, you know, the healing aspect. So he invited me over to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And so I flew over there.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, first of all, I'm really thankful that he asked me, you know, it was a great honor for one thing. And it was also
it gave me a different perspective of how a lot of the martial artists can benefit from the healing aspects.
Yeah.
I saw how they were really good in the martial aspects, but when it came to certain movements, it was just a matter of redirecting the energy, the movements, the intent.
Yes.
Especially the intent.
Yeah.
Now focusing their energy into helping somebody heal. I mean, you have so many things. You have various injuries. For example, if somebody were to fall down and sprain their ankle, you go to a Western doctor, they would examine it, they would take an x-ray and say, okay, you have a sprained ankle or you have a broken bone or something. They would tell you to go through sessions of physical therapy, bed rest, anti-inflammatories, pain medication, and then eventually you would be able to go back to work.
Yeah.
So you have that whole that process of where you go to all these different specialists for the healing. However, if you were to if you were back home in the Philippines and you were to sprain your ankle, you go to the manghihilot or the mga bulon. They would, of course, they would examine it.
Yeah.
Then they would do their thing, their manual manual medicine, to set it if it's needed.
Yeah.
Or to recorrect or to correct the flow.
Yeah.
Of the various structures within.
Yeah.
To help speed up the process, they would put a split made of bamboo, perhaps. They would also put a poultice of herbs if needed. But there's also one question they would ask. Why did you sprain your ankle?
No.
Oh, I was walking and I accidentally fell into a hole. No, why did you sprain your ankle? Why did you fall? Why did you sprain your ankle? And then finally they would think about it. Oh, because I was thinking about something else. Something was bothering me.
Yeah.
So what's happening is you're going to the root of why it happened in the first place.
Yeah.
So the healer is more in tune with this holistic approach, and that they just don't look at the physical aspect, but they go into the spiritual, mental, emotional aspects as well.
Yeah.
And so for a person who knows the martial arts, they have an advantage because they understand the way the body moves.
Yes.
They just need some certain terminology, a different perspective of things, which would also help them to delve more into the healing aspect as well.
But that's fascinating, because that perspective, I see it easily in Filipino martial arts that we have, that we connect it to a lot of things, one of the things, I'd have to even see if it would be possible, but if you would ever consider it, my wife, along with some of our friends, started a Filipino cultural school program in Maryland, and it's every few months, and we just try to do a mix of things. We always do some form of Filipino martial arts, sometimes with sticks, sometimes with empty hands. They do a little bit of the dance, learn different dances. They'll learn some songs or maybe learn some words, and sometimes have different activities, some history or something. But I think it would be great if we would ever be able to make it happen, if you could come and talk to some of the kids about it, because I think there's a lot of yearning for the youth and even their parents, like me, who maybe grew up here in the U.S. that really want to connect with our Filipino culture, and somehow innately we know that it's more than about, as much as we love it, it's more than about like pancit and
and lumpia,
yeah,
and adobo,
yeah, and tinikling. That's great, like that, but there's much more to it than that.
And aswang.
Yeah, one of the things that you talked, that you wrote about, was like this sense of like kind of a reclaiming, or not maybe not reclaiming, but like promoting our cultural identity, and how that identity is vast, that it encompasses all these things. And so if it would ever work out, I mean, I'll talk to you some more about it, but
oh, I'm very open. A couple of years ago I actually did a workshop in Manhattan.
Okay. Yeah.
And using the workshops that I do, I introduce both the martial healing aspects.
Yeah.
Of course it depends on who is present.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, put more emphasis on one or the over the other.
Yeah.
For example, in Barcelona, I taught them some of the club swinging exercises.
Okay, yeah.
And of course, I didn't have the actual clubs. I looked like bowling pins. You've seen some pictures that I have or videos. Actually, that right there, although it has its foundation in the Indian practice of club swinging,
yeah,
the movements are actually from the, in this case,
yeah,
from my background in Kabarwan, Cinque Terre,
oh,
or Dija Kabarwanan.
Uh-huh.
And so the club swinging aspect I call Dija Mudgara, Dija being the older name of the Ilocano method of Iskrima.
Uh-huh.
Mudgara is a Sanskrit term for club.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people can take the clubs, if those in FMA, oh yeah, I can swing those, and they will swing it like Sinwali style.
Yeah.
However, the method that I teach it, I swing it, involves a totally different set of body mechanics.
Yeah.
Which are more in line with swinging longer and heavier weaponry.
Yes.
Especially like those that are practiced in the north.
Yeah.
Where you have weapons that can be anywhere from 36, 42 inches long.
Yeah.
Made from hardwood, heavy hardwood.
Yeah.
Because that's also another aspect. I really emphasize the body mechanics.
Yes.
When it comes to both martial and healing arts.
Yeah.
You have the movements that are translatable from the healing into martial, or the martial into healing.
Yes.
It all boils down to the rudimentary of movement.
Yeah.
And it expands to where the intent brings it.
Yeah.
Or delivers it.
And I think it can be very healthy. I mean, you know, Lolo Kakoe Kenyette passed away recently, but up until his like last few years, you know, when, of course, he was up in age, and he was kind of shuffling, and his posture was very, you know, like hunched over, but you know, when he would get up on the mat to do like a few minutes of a demonstration, you could really see how the movement really, like, it's almost like it woke up his spirit. You could literally see that it did it. And then when he was finished, he kind of reverted, you know, like he went back to kind of the state that he was in before. But it's,
oh yes,
I think there's a lot of whether it's healing or spiritual, there's a lot of benefits to those movements, as far as obviously affecting life, but also giving life to a person.
Yeah, it's funny how a lot of them also, even if they haven't touched a weapon for how many years, once it's in hand,
that's
it comes
true
out so naturally.
Yeah, that's true.
There was one, because I have different backgrounds in regards to Eskrima. I did my research in the northern methods, northern Luzon, particularly the Ilocano and Pangasinan methods. But I also have a background in Siete Pares Eskrima of the Visayan region. When I met the grandmaster of Siete Pares back in Olongapo, Well, he's originally from the Visayas, but he moved up to Ilongapo. He said that he hasn't touched a weapon for how many years?
Yeah.
But then when he had the weapon, everything just flowed out so naturally.
Yeah.
Of course, he was short-winded.
Yeah.
But all the movements were so smooth.
Yeah. You know, there's somewhere, it's on YouTube, and it'll get resurfaced every once in a while on Facebook or something, but like in the 1950s, there was like a French documentary on, and on, you know, like, I don't remember where they were, but on, you know, Escrima.
They were in Tarlac.
Yeah.
In so, Patli?
Yes. So about 10 years ago, there was some, she was like a little girl, her and her father.
Mm-hmm.
They went and they found those people again, and they had never seen the footage of themselves as kids.
The mute.
Yes.
The little boy.
I'm pretty sure they like gave him a stick again, and he kind of moved, and he hadn't done it since that time, and it was like the same thing, he kind of came alive again. You know, so it's interesting how that, it's so interesting to me.
How it's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that someone had told me before was that, you know, with our Filipino martial arts, that it was always there before us and will always be there after us. So even if you take a step away for a little while or take a break, it's still there. Like, it's going on. And in us learning these techniques or practicing our motions and movements, it's less about acquiring skill, although there's that too, and it's also about accessing, you know, this movement and this energy that's already in existence. And through our training with our partners, from our teachers, we learn how to access that, and we can benefit from all these, you know, the culture and all the peoples that came before us. I like that too. I think that's I don't know, very beautiful in a way.
Very beautiful, yes.
I this time last year when I was actually with Guru Victor, Guy Chase from Boston was also here, and he had trained with in the I don't know if he trained with Ben Largusa, but he trained in that Villabrea Largusa system.
Oh, okay.
And he was telling us how in the beginning of their sessions they say a prayer asking for the blessings of the spirits that came before them, and they ask that they bless that the training session, and they bless those students and give like their permission and their blessing for them to train. And at the end of the session, they believe that that blessing goes out with the students. So in the beginning of the session, they ask for the blessing to come into this, to the training. And at the end of the session, they believe that the blessing goes out along with the students. I always thought, I really like that idea too.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely keep in touch with you, you know, because I don't think I have real aspirations to necessarily be a healer, but I'm so fascinated with it, and I think it's important for us to, even if I'm not a healer, to, you know, help keep the awareness and educate people, because I think it's something that can easily be forgotten about in time.
Yes. There's one thing that I do teach. I just named it seated therapy, where the person's seated, but it focuses on the upper body.
Yeah.
And that's actually the first thing I would teach.
Okay.
And it doesn't involve the oils or a table or anything or the ground.
Yeah.
But just a simple chair, sitting down or sitting on the ground.
Uh-huh.
But what's what's beneficial about that is that it involves the upper body, it involves the shoulders, the neck, and of course, you know, these are movements that, or body parts that the martial artists or what have you are involved with constantly.
Yeah.
And so even just knowledge of that right there can go a long ways.
Yeah. Well, Master Virgil, I just want to say thank you again for making the time, you know, to meet with
welcome.
Me. You know, to my knowledge, your book is the only one really that I think there's probably a few others that might be out there, but you know, the Way of the Healing Warrior.
Way of the Healing Warrior?
No, I'm sorry.
That title I've heard.
Yeah.
Way of the Ancient Healer.
Way of the Ancient Healer.
Yes.
I really do think is, I'm sure it's the most comprehensive one that's out there that, you know, touches on a lot of different things. So, you know, I just want to thank you for putting that out because I'm sure it was a big labor of love for you to, you know, sit down and put into a format.
Yeah, so, you know, that particular book, it took, actually that was only a portion of everything that I do have. That's unpublished.
Really?
And it took over 15 years to write that.
Yeah.
The whole thing, that is.
Yeah.
But it was only that portion that was extracted from the whole thing and then published.
Yeah.
You know, in regards to origins, history, shamanic spiritual practices and such. And you could tell I'm very visual. I have tons of pictures in there.
I love it. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm working on couple of others. The seated therapy is one. I kind of put that on the back burner because I'm focusing on another book on Eskrima.
Okay. Yes.
So that one I'm going to approach it, or I've approached it the same way, very similar to Way of the Ancient Healer.
Yeah.
It's going to have a very similar vibe.
Oh, that's great.
To that.
Well, I'm excited for that. Well, thank you again. I'm gonna, you know, stop the recording.
Yes, okay.
And then I'll take, you know, the links from your website and you know, all your social media. I'll put it up. I'll let you know when I post it up so that you can see it.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.